Here they come. Turn four. Final lap.
Rev up your engines and get ready for the racing weekend.
Checkered flag.
It's Chasing Checkers with your host, Chase McCabe, on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
And welcome into Chasing Checkers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Is presented by Hillside Medical. Chase McCabe here with you every Saturday morning at 9 as we talk NASCAR and auto racing here with you. Appreciate everybody that has reached out about the passing of my dad. Took a little break last week just because I needed to, and I'm happy to be back talking racing. We have a loaded show with a ton of guests joining us here this week. We will talk about something that's going on at the Nashville Super Speedway here in just a few minutes with Chris Baker. William Byron, the driver of the number 24, is going to join us. Matt Jaskel, a very cool story, ran the Xfinity race last week after jumping out of a helicopter. So we'll get his story. And then Steve Letarte of NASCAR and NBC going to join us as well. So a lot of fun, a lot of things to get into. I want to start off with this, though. I did my Cup schedule a few weeks ago, after the Cup Series schedule was released for 2022. Now the Xfinity Series, which is going to get a new logo, purple, going to be the color. I kind of like that. And the Camping World Truck Series have released their schedules as well. And some highlights will be that with the Xfinity Series, they're going to go to Portland International Raceway, which is the first time that NASCAR has raced there in 20-something years. The trucks had run there before, but back in 99 and 2000 is when they ran there. But I think this is cool because I know NASCAR has been wanting to go to the Pacific, Pacific Northwest, and they have not done that in quite some time, like I mentioned. So that's a new venue to the Xfinity Series that they're going to be adding. It's a road course. So again, more road courses coming to NASCAR as well. But with the Truck Series, they're adding a race. They're going from 22 to 23, which I think is cool because as Ben Kennedy from NASCAR pointed out, it's some of the best racing that they have, and more fans are watching the Truck Series and want to see more of that. So I think that that is going to be cool that they add a race. They are going back to Lucas Oil Raceway, IRP, the short track in Indianapolis. The trucks will run there for the first time since 2011. I am thrilled that they are going to run this track. I have it on my Cup schedule, as you remember. And so I'm hoping that, you know, maybe this builds some excitement for that. Just another short track, a cool short track. So I'm really glad that they are going to do that. They're also going to run the trucks at Mid-Ohio, which the Xfinity Series has been doing. They're going to run at Sonoma. So more road courses for both of these series. So I like it. I really like what they're doing. I think that NASCAR has made a concerted effort to have more variety when it comes to their schedules. And I think that that is exactly what they need to have. 15 triple-header weekends will make up the 2022 schedule, including right here in Nashville at the Super Speedway, as they will run the trucks on the 24th, the Xfinity Series on the 25th, which is my birthday, and the Cup Series on the 26th. So the Ally 400 weekend will be just as it was this year, with a triple header weekend, which I think is cool. I like it when those series go to other places, like away from the Cup Series, but I think the more you can have them all together, the better it'll be for NASCAR, for everybody involved, because people like to see the Cup drivers run in the other series as well. So I think it certainly all works out. Speaking of things working out, Denny Hamlin, and we're going to talk a lot about him today. On the show, Steve Letarte, like I said, is going to join us. We'll get his thoughts. But remember when everybody was like, man, he hadn't won yet. What's going on with Denny Hamlin? Well, now he is in a very, very good position. He won at Las Vegas. It's his second win in the playoffs, and he is dominating from that standpoint. Now, Larson's not going away. You know, Larson is 1-2 for sure. But I think you, if you're a Denny Hamlin fan, you have to feel pretty good about things as they sit right now, because he's got two wins now. They're all in the playoffs. He's sitting in the lead in the points, and he and Larson just duking it out at the top. But Martin Truex Jr. is right there. He's got to win. Kyle Busch isn't going away. I mean, there's still a long way to go in these playoffs, but if you look at the big picture and you listen to Denny Hamlin like we're about to do, he very well could have won just about every race that they have had so far, and that just shows you the consistency that that team runs with.
Well, my crew chief would say I missed out on two more wins in the first round, so we should have won all of them. So I can't disagree. We probably should have won every race so far in the playoffs. I guess I've heard out there we've led a third of all the laps so far in the playoffs. So, I mean, we're good. We knew that, you know, this is what we're capable of, and really we've shown this all year long. It shows in laps led, top fives, top tens, but you know, for whatever reason, whether it be bad luck or, you know, mistakes on our own, we haven't got all the bunches of wins that we've had in the past. So hopefully this is a start of a really good run.
He's leading a ton of laps. He's got confidence, which I think is a good and dangerous thing for everybody else. This could be the year. As dominant as Larson has been with all the races that he's won, Denny Hamlin has been the most consistent and certainly could be in a position to win his first championship and get himself out of that conversation. Even though Mark Martin is certainly somebody that you'd love to be compared to, but he's called the modern day Mark Martin because he wins so much and he's come so close, but he hasn't won a championship. Maybe this is the year, but with this playoff format, you never know. And that's what I love about it. So Denny Hamlin, of course, goes into Talladega as the favorite. We'll talk more about that as Sunday Money. But Denny Hamlin, very, very tough to beat right now. I mentioned the Nashville Super Speedway earlier. They have a cool event going on this weekend. It is the C10 Nationals out at the Nashville Super Speedway. And to help us talk a little bit more about that, we bring in Chris Baker. He runs the C10 Nationals. Chris, how's it going?
I'm doing great.
So what can fans look forward to if they've never been to an event, a truck show like this before? What can they look forward to?
We host some of the largest GM truck events in the country. And by GM truck, I mean Chevrolet and GMC. And just about any year, we have obviously the truck show with a lot of different awards. That's pretty standard with a car or truck show. But we also have Autocross, which is free for anyone that registers their truck for the event. We have a burnout contest. We have a dyno. We have a big vendor midway. We have a swap meet. So we've got a lot of different things and moving pieces of the event going on, a lot of different things to see if you come out and check out the trucks.
Yeah, and you say these trucks, I mean, you're going to see like a lot of vintage trucks, some really cool things. If you're a car nut or a truck nut like I am, this has to be a fun weekend.
Yeah, it's even if classic cars or trucks, if you're into those, I would say our sweet spot this weekend would be probably 60 to 98, but there's going to be newer trucks and there'll be older trucks. Something for everybody. And, you know, the thing about a truck show is no two trucks are alike, so there's always something different to look at.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So Nashville, the Nashville Super Speedway, is I've talked about a lot on this show of how important it was to get that place reopened, to get events back out there. How important is the Nashville market to an event like the C10 Nationals?
Well, we think that in Nashville and in this general region of the country, that Kentucky, Alabama, Georgia, and Carolinas, that trucks are the hot rod today. And I think other than maybe Texas and that area of the country, this area of the country is where it's at. And, you know, there's a lot of builds in this area of the country for those trucks are different than, say, a West Coast or a Texas. I just think that because there's a lot of NASCAR ingenuity and technology still kind of floating around this area of the country. So you start to see that a little bit in some of the trucks that we see in this area of the country.
C10 Nationals coming up this weekend at the Nashville Super Speedway. So Friday, I know registration is taking place Thursday, but Friday, Saturday, those are the big days. What are some of the schedule highlights that you'd like to pass along to fans?
Gates open at 7 o'clock for trucks. If you're pre-registered, you can get in earlier than that, but that's passed. So you can register Thursday, Friday, or Saturday at the track. It's $70 for the truck and two adults to get in, or it's $20 a day for spectators. Kids 12 and under are free. So bring the family. The weather is going to be great, looks like, and it's going to be one of the largest shows on this side of the river. So we're excited.
How many trucks do you anticipate being at this thing?
We've done this three times in Texas at Texas Motor Speedway, so we have a pretty good idea when we base our numbers off pre-registration numbers. So we're predicting that we'll have 700 to 800 trucks this weekend, and then next year we'll probably be over 1,000.
That is fantastic. Well, I know it's going to be a fun event. I know everyone around here and you all have to be excited about it, to have all those trucks and just to continue to build it as Nashville Super Speedway continues to build its following. But appreciate the time today and best of luck this weekend.
Hey, we hope to see everybody out there. Thanks, Chase.
So there you go. Talked to him earlier in the week and it continues today. So if you want something fun to do, go check out the C10 Nationals at the Nashville Super Speedway. When we come back here on Chasing Checkers presented by Hillside Medical, we are going to be joined by the driver of the number 24 Hendrick Motorsports Chevrolet. William Byron is in the on-deck circle as you listen to Chasing Checkers on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app. We're back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game on the Game Nashville app, all presented by Hillside Medical. And told you we had a packed show, and now we say hello to William Byron. He is the driver of the number 24 Hendrick Chevy. William, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. The playoffs have basically lived up to the billing. They are wild, and you never know what's going to happen. But right now you find yourself just 4 points out of the round of eight going into the unknown that is Talladega. What do you think about your position right now? Through the first few races of the playoffs?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Talladega. I feel like we definitely had a lot of speed at Las Vegas and just had a few mishaps and a flat tire. But overall, I think Talladega is going to be unpredictable, but it always is. And just try to put ourselves in a good position and work with my spotter Tab to make sure that we're on the same page and we can make the right moves and race aggressive. So I think the stage points will be a big factor and guys will be trying to go for those in the playoffs and try to put themselves in a position to succeed for the end of the race.
With where you are in the points, obviously, you know, as you just said, stage points and Talladega, you want to stay out of trouble, which is more easier said than done. But do you find yourself in a more of a points race or a must win, or how do you view this race, even though there's going to be one more before the cutoff?
Yeah, I think honestly, we just want to try to put ourselves in a decent position going to the Roval. So, I mean, definitely a win would be ideal, but try to get some points and try to race hard for the stages and then obviously have a shot at the end of the race to win. So, yeah, I think it's definitely going to be a difficult race, but the stage points are a big factor, you know, and that can kind of factor into how you end up racing at the end.
Talladega is obviously, from the fans' point of view, fun to watch because it is so unpredictable. But from the driver's seat, you've won at Daytona. What is it like going around the largest track on the NASCAR schedule?
Well, yeah, I think it's really a wide racetrack, so you've got a lot more room than Daytona to make moves. And sometimes that's good, but also can kind of break up some of the momentum and make it to where, you know, it's hard to make those blocks and kind of keep guys behind you. So I think there's that factor. And so there's probably a little bit more passing and a little bit less organization, but I think overall it's just one of those places you just have to be aggressive. And it's, like you said, it's such a big racetrack. So there's a lot of time to make moves, and with the start finish line being as far around as it is, you have a lot of time to still try to win the race, you know, on the last lap. So that's the interesting part, I think, is that you come off turn four and the race is not over by any means. So you just got to kind of stay in it until you get closer to the start finish line.
Yeah, absolutely. This year has been a fun one for Hendrick Motorsports. Obviously, a lot of winning by all four of you, and I know that has to feel good. Rick becomes the winningest car owner in history. What's it been like to be a part of that this year?
It's been amazing. I mean, it's probably been the most fun that I've had driving race cars, and just the speed that we've had and competitiveness. It's been a blast. So I think it'll continue, hopefully, for years to come with the lineup that we have and the crew chiefs we have and all the people working at the shop. So I feel like yeah, it's a start to something really good, and we've all had great years. So it's been nice to have the speed and be able to have opportunities to win like we have.
Yeah, what's the competition like amongst the four of you? I mean, Kyle's obviously done a ton of winning. Chase coming off a championship. Alex has won. You've won. I mean, I know you're all teammates, but it's got to be a little bit of fun to try and beat the other one.
Oh, it is for sure. I think we're you know, we work well together, but we also are competitors. And, yeah, we definitely race really hard. And I feel like we've probably raced harder between ourselves, but smart, you know, to try to race for wins and things like that. So yeah, it is a lot of fun. I think, you know, I've learned how to kind of race, you know, my teammates for the wins and for being up front. So yeah, it's a different feeling than racing somebody else, but definitely I feel like we've all worked pretty well together when it comes down to, you know, key situations in the different races.
William Byron is with us here on Chasing Checkers. So you're 4 years into your Cup career, and this is by far your best year with one win. But the 10 top fives, 17 top tens, your team has been very consistent. How would you evaluate yourself as you've had to learn? I mean, I know I've heard guys say going from the Xfinity Series to the Cup Series is one of the hardest things that they've ever done, and it takes time. But how would you evaluate your career as you're in your fourth year?
Yeah, I think it's been a solid year for us. We've definitely had a lot of potential, and you know, it just kind of comes down to the end of the year when you're trying to capitalize on the playoffs and these three race stretch events and kind of just putting yourself in the best position. So there's still two races left in this round, and just really looking forward to trying to, you know, get all we can in those two races, and feel like we, you know, pulled out a good finish in the last round to advance, and we just have to try to have two really good races and advance through the next round. I think we're definitely capable of that. And the next round, I'm pretty excited about the tracks that we have there and the way we've been able to run on those racetracks.
I think the last time I talked to you, you were about to test the next gen car at Daytona. So I know you did that. How did you think it felt? And as they continue to develop this thing, do you feel like it's on schedule to be ready to go at Daytona in 22?
I do. I think the teams are starting to get their hands on it more, and the development's starting to pick up, and guys are, you know, there's a lot more testing about to happen with the car. So yeah, I think it's going to be fine. I think it is going to be a different kind of racing. You know, I think we're going to have more difficulty kind of, you know, at first being side by side and learning how to race each other and how aggressive we can be. So it's going to take some learning, but I think over time, I think we'll all be fine, and the teams will figure it out, and we'll have a good product. So it's going to be probably 6 to 8 months of a lot of adjustment period, but kind of, you know, that'll be a nice off-season project, I guess.
Yeah. And how cool is it for you of, you know, as a young driver, you know, the next generation coming through here, that you get to, you know, have a hands-on opportunity to help develop this new car?
It is cool. I think for me, I'm a pretty blank slate when it comes to experience. So I don't feel like I have a lot of ideas of like how it should drive or how it should feel in testing. You know, I never really tested the previous car, maybe a couple times. So it's all pretty new to me, but yeah, I think that, you know, so that has a pretty big factor in kind of the way that I approach it. And that is, that's probably the biggest thing, is a lot of us haven't, you know, really, this is the first time we're kind of getting into a new car, because we've all been in the Gen 6 car for years, and things have kind of not really changed that much. So it's all a learning experience, but, you know, I think everyone's kind of pitching in and trying to help where they can.
Well, it's going to be neat to see when they race it at Daytona. But a lot of business to take care of before then, including this weekend at Talladega. And, William, best of luck. Thanks for taking the time. As always, always good to have you on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And appreciate William Byron for joining us of Hendrick Motorsports, the driver of the number 24. Of course, he's going to roll off 10th at Talladega coming up tomorrow. And you heard it. I mean, it's unpredictable. That's exactly what Talladega is. But he's won on super speedways before at Daytona, so you never know. Somebody asked me my pick for this weekend. I said, take everybody's name, throw it in a hat, and pick one out, because that's really the best way to go about Talladega. I told you this was going to be a loaded show, and I told you we had some fun things planned. Well, coming up next, if you watched the Xfinity race last week, you saw driver Matt Jaskel jump out of a helicopter and parachute into the track at Vegas and then run the race. It was a really cool story. We're going to talk to Matt when we come back and find out a little bit more of how this all came about and get his story, because I think this kind of stuff is really, really cool, and we like to do that here on the show. Steve Letarte also coming up later from NBC Sports. You're listening to Chasing Checkers, presented by Hillside Medical on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app. We're back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app, all brought to you by Hillside Medical. And if you saw the Xfinity race last week, you saw Hendersonville's Josh Berry get the win, which was awesome. But pre-race was even cooler with Matt Jaskel and his entrance. It wasn't your typical walk across the stage and wave to the fans. He decided to jump out of a plane, and he is on the line with us now. And Matt, quite the entrance. It was a lot of fun to see. How's it going?
Good. Hey, I got to clarify. It was a helicopter, actually.
Or a helicopter. There you go. Helicopter. I've already screwed this up. But nonetheless, it was cooler than most entrances because you had to parachute in. I know you're a skydiving instructor, and these are, you know, a stunt driver, and you like the thrill, but what made you decide to do this before a race?
You know, I mean, lots of reasons. You know, there's never one reason, I like to think. I mean, hey, I'm here talking to you right now, so that's a bonus.
Yeah.
part of I've had a long journey in the career of motorsports. Excuse me. And you know, skydiving has been a big part of my life. I started skydiving about 7 years ago when I wasn't racing. You know, just like a lot of drivers, you know, my racing career had pretty, you know, pretty big setbacks with family, health issues, financial issues. And that was, you know, the extent of it, really. Was mostly just, you know, didn't have the sponsorship, bad timing, you know, right when I was moving up to the big leagues, you know, the economic collapse happened, and that was a major setback. And then, you know, kind of clawed my way back. And then my father had a heart attack, it survived, but I left my job at the Speedway, which was actually working as the lead instructor of a driving experience out there called Dream Racing. And I took over the family business. And, you know, and then during that time, right around the time I took over the family business, skydiving was what kind of filled that void in my life. You know, I wasn't looking for adrenaline. I was just looking for something to do, something that I could learn that was difficult and intricate. And skydiving ended up being it. So this idea to skydive into my hometown race was kind of like a no-brainer in the sense of asking, hey, can we pull this off? But the fact that we were able to pull it off is what was more amazing.
Yeah, and it was cool to see. I can't imagine what it was like seeing it in person. And I've been to the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. It's an awesome facility. But seeing it on TV was pretty darn cool. What was kind of some of the reaction from the other drivers that either before or after you did this?
The before, that's a good question. Some of the before was, you're going to do what? it was cool, man. You know, there were so many entities that were involved. You know, the Las Vegas Motor Speedway, the ELSCO, the title sponsor of the race, because they have to approve it. And then the ground crew, people that helped me to file the paperwork, and the sponsor, AutoPartsForLess.com, even, you know, getting him on board. He was kind of like, wait a minute, why? What do you, why do you want to do this? What's the point? You know, there was so many moving importance. Oh, of course, there's that little entity called NASCAR.
Yes.
I had to get NASCAR to say yes to it. And the fact that everybody said yes was amazing. So some of the drivers and friends were like, you're going to do what? And then some people that know me were like, oh, of course you're going to do that. And then when I landed, it was actually a lot, you know, it all ended up going even better than expected. You know, my teammate David Starr was right there, and he was like, man, and I respect that guy so much. He's been doing this a long time. He's been so helpful to me on track. So to have his big smile, just like, man, that was so cool. And something that was, I even took a little honor in it, Ty Gibbs. You know, I don't even know him, but he seems like such a cool kid and obviously a legendary family. And he made a point to reach out, grab my hand, and he was like, dude, that was so awesome. And I don't even know the kid, so that was really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, those are the kind of things that help somebody like you. Is, you know, you, everybody's talking about it. I read the piece in The Athletic as they followed you around. I think it was Jordan Bianchi wrote about it. I mean, that is good publicity, and it's such a cool event, especially after all we've been through with COVID and everything, and just getting fans back at the track and still battling through it. To be able to talk about something awesome other than the race itself, that's got to feel neat for you.
I could get emotional talking about it because there's so much more to it than people will ever really know. And I'll do my best to make a long story long, like a good friend always says, but to try to keep it short, is there were so many more reasons than just to skydive in. It was one of those rare things. And I've had this feeling of relief, I guess would be a way of saying it. Like, there were so many wins in this situation. The Las Vegas Motor Speedway and the people that said yes have been friends of mine for 20 years. You know, like Nason Gray, the, you know, vice president of marketing, and then the VP of communications, Jeff Motley. I mean, these people I've known for literally about 20 years, and they've always believed in me. They've always supported me. And those listening that have like, who the hell's Matt Jaskel? Never heard of him. You know, I do have a pretty extensive background in motorsports. I was an F1 development driver for Red Bull. I was one of those stories that, you know, almost made it. You know, I mean, I was racing with Marco Andretti, Graham Rahal, James Hinchcliffe, you know, a lot of IndyCar guys because that was my path, and was winning, you know, was winning at the highest level for a junior driver, and it all kind of just fell apart, you know, with again, financial issues and family and things like that. And so here I am 10 years later, you know, out of professional motorsports, essentially. I mean, I never gave up. I was always working. I would do a couple races a year. I would work as a racing instructor. I was always staying, you know, active, and I was always, my love for motorsports always stayed there. I never turned my back on it. I never gave up. And I wanted to kind of be able to try to tell the story, like you're letting me do right now, that this, the whole life come full circle thing, 15 years later, almost, you know, like the guy that sponsored the jump so we could donate money was my first team owner in stock cars in 2005 when I won an ASA Speed Truck Championship because I lost my Red Bull gig, you know. And so there was just so much, there were so many more emotional stories within it. And I've never raced a professional race at my hometown, and I've lived in Las Vegas for 30 years. It should have happened a long time ago, and it never did. The sponsor is a friend of mine of 20 years that I met racing go-karts here in Las Vegas. So there was so much more to the story. So to do the jump was to tie all of that together, to say thank you to everybody that has supported my life, to pull off something I said I was going to do and prove that we could do it. And that was, there was so much more meaning behind it than just, let me just do a cool stunt into a race.
Matt Jaskel is with us talking about his jump at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And then he goes and climbs in a race car. So, you know, some people might say, well, you did something crazy and then you went and did something crazy by getting in a race car. But your story is awesome. I mean, and I love telling these kind of stories on this show. I've been a racing fan my entire life. And so to have you on is truly awesome because I think this is so cool. So what's next? I mean, this obviously opens some doors. People are talking about it. So what do you think you could do to build off of this?
Yeah, I know. And to say something, the most dangerous part of my day, sadly, was getting in the race car.
Right.
That was definitely with no practice, no qualifying, you know, only six races into Xfinity. That was definitely the most stressful part of my day. But, you know, the sponsor, like, again, AutoPartsForLess.com is a new business. It's also a friend. MBM Motorsports, Carl Long, I want to say thank you to them because I don't know where this is going to go. You know, they took a chance on me. NASCAR took a chance on me. The sponsor did. And I think I did a good job. You know, I kept my nose clean. I finished in the top 20 from dead last on one of the road courses. You know, had some solid finishes on the ovals, even though we had some, you know, a few problems along the way, and was able to finish all the laps. Staying out of trouble is never easy. But the idea now is to just, again, maybe share that story and show people I was always here. you know, I'm just a little late to the show, and I'm still fast. I still have the ability to be out there, and I can do some unique things that other drivers can't. And where I would really like to see it, obviously, is just in a full-time ride next year. And that's the main mission right now, whether it's truck, Xfinity, whatever, just to be in a full-time season.
And so do you think you'd want to stick with NASCAR? No, the open wheel background, is that something that might draw you in as well?
You know, at my age, I'm still young enough, I'd like to believe that my life might, I don't think I'll, if I'm just completely transparent and honest, I don't know if my life will ever feel complete unless I get a chance to start the Indy 500.
Yeah.
You know, that's something I worked since I'm 36 and I started this journey at the age of 5. You know, and I don't think anybody necessarily deserves anything, but once again, it's not just me. We're talking hundreds of people and countless time and hours and money for my career, and I do have the ability to do it. So I believe that I deserve a shot to maybe try to start the Indy 500 or qualify for it. But again, it's, you know, it's huge funding, it's huge money. Let's call it what it is in racing. As far as full time, I think NASCAR is where I'd like to be, especially at my age. NASCAR is the show. I, sure. Of course, I love IndyCar. That was my passion. I just don't think it's as realistic as it is in the NASCAR series. And hell, I'd love to be in NASCAR. It was always a dream, even though I worked towards open wheel. That's just where my career was being pushed. But it wasn't that I didn't want to do NASCAR. That was just the path. But, you know, obviously things change in life a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, it's not the Indy 500, but I will say, you know, we have obviously NASCAR out at the Nashville Super Speedway now. They made their return, so that includes the Xfinity Series. But the Music City Grand Prix, the IndyCar is on the streets of Nashville. Maybe we could get something set up. You can skydive into that and run that next year. That would be fun.
Hey, you know what? You know I'm not opposed. So, yeah, you know, we'll see. Obviously, this has been amazing. I actually didn't even expect as much, I guess, publicity as we got, which was amazing. And, you know, and I didn't screw up the jump. I landed safely. And I, you know, even though the result is not as good as we would have liked, you know, I still drove up halfway through the field at one point, and we had a tire issue at the end. You know, we had some wheel weights come off, blah, 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 whatever. You know, we had to run 100 laps on a right front tire. But to just get in the car, no practice, no qualifying, never have I been in this car on that track. And I drove forward and I didn't get caught up in a wreck, you know, so that's still a victory in my book, for the equipment we have on the budget that we're on. So I guess I'd like to say, you know, give me a shot in some, with a little bit of time and some practice and some solid equipment. And I think we'll turn some heads.
Well, I love it. Your story, like I said, this is awesome, and I'm glad I was able to get you on the show. And don't be a stranger. Happy to help any way I possibly can, but appreciate you taking the time today.
I appreciate you giving me the time, man. Thank you so much.
Such a neat story. I mean, I love different things like that, and you know, I can relate of family coming first and all of that, so I totally respect that out of him. So wish him nothing but the best and hope that there are good things ahead for Matt Jaskal. When we come back, we'll get you set for Talladega. We'll kind of take a look at what's going on in the playoffs so far. NBC's very own Steve Letarte going to join us. He, of course, the former crew chief for Jeff Gordon, for Dale Earnhardt Jr., now in the booth with Dale Jr., Jeff Burton, and the great Rick Allen as well. We'll talk to him next as you listen to Chasing Checkers, presented by Hillside Medical on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
If you've missed any of today's show, just search Chasing Checkers on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform.
Welcome back into Chasing Checkers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. It's all presented by Hillside Medical. Chase McCabe here with you, and pleased to be joined by somebody that's no stranger to this show. He's been on with us several times in the past, Steve Letarte of NASCAR on NBC, and also one of the best crew chiefs out there. Steve, how you doing?
Man, I am doing great. It's an exciting time of year. The playoffs are here. It doesn't matter the sport. When you get into the playoffs, everything gets amped up, and it's that way in NASCAR.
Yeah, and it's been wild so far. I mean, even though we've seen Kyle Larson, of course, find victory lane, but Denny Hamlin, the guy that everybody was wondering when he was going to win, even though he had been consistent all season long, he finally does it when it counts the most in the playoffs. He's already in the round of eight after he got his second win of the year. I think Larson's still the favorite to win this championship, but should more people be looking at Denny Hamlin?
Well, I think what's now is a clear path for Denny Hamlin to make the championship four. I really think when you look at the championship, it's kind of like, I equate it to kind of like the NCAA tournament. First thing you got to do is get to the dance. You got to get to the final right. four. You cannot win it without having a chance in the end. And I think what Denny Hamlin has done is he has cleared the path where you can mentally get by the fact that he can get there. I think Larson has so many playoff points and so much raw speed, it's easy for us to put him there. Then it's kind of a knockdown, drag out at Phoenix. Well, I mean, Denny Hamlin's won two playoff races, so he's proven he can best Kyle Larson at certain situations. We'll see if those situations arise. But I spent some time with Denny Hamlin this week, and I will tell you, he's happy. He's smiling. He looks relaxed. That is usually a dangerous sports figure at anybody of his talent level when he kind of gets comfortable in the situation.
I heard you guys talking about it during the race broadcast, and other people have made this comparison before, that, you know, is he the modern day Mark Martin, meaning that one of the best drivers in the sport just doesn't have the championship to go with it. He's obviously got a long way to go in his career, but I think even putting him in that same conversation as Mark Martin is quite the compliment.
Well, I mean, his resume stacks up to it. I love Mark. He's a Hall of Famer for a reason. But if you look at Denny Hamlin's resume, if you really take the personality aside and just take the accomplishments, they're breathtaking. They're Hall of Fame worthy. And I believe there's some comfort that Denny Hamlin is okay saying, you know, I'm not a champion. I want to be one, but I've had a great year. I've had a great career. And if I'm not a champion, I'll still sleep well at night. And I think much like his success in the playoffs, that almost makes him more dangerous because he's a little off the radar. You know, he's not the quote favorite. He's not the bullseye. And, you know, we all know, you know, the hardest putt to make in golf is the one you have to make with everybody watching. Well, if you kind of aren't the favorite, maybe it's kind of just a little bit more like practice and a little less like the pressure situation. We'll see. Either way, he's in the round eight. He's still not in the championship four. He's only in the round eight. And I'm going to tell you, Kansas, Texas, and Martinsville, you know, tracks he runs well at, but there's no guarantees. That's why you got to tune in.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing I've been impressed with the most with him is this year he's added car owner to his list of things that he does. So he's able to balance that while driving the race car for Joe Gibbs. But he's also been very outspoken. I mean, he's kind of the voice of the drivers. He's trying to leave the drivers, the garage, so to speak, better than the way he found it, trying to set up for the future. How impressed are you that he's able to balance all of those different things while being competitive inside the car?
I think he's done a nice job. Now, I also believe, though, that some of the downturn he had during the regular season, I think that he had to find his comfort into all of those different roles, specifically as a car owner. It takes time, it takes energy, and I think it did affect their regular season. What I wonder is, you know, the Kurt Busch announcement's out, and it's a lot easier to compartmentalize things for 10 weeks when you know you can get there eventually. And I just wonder if, you know, over the last few weeks in the playoffs, if he didn't say, hey, listen, I love owning 2311. But we got our driver announced. Guys, don't call me. Call me in 10 weeks. I have to be a race car driver for Joe Gibbs this week. And that's kind of, from the outside looking in, I can believe it. He's not said anything that proved that to me. But I just know as a crew chief, you know, we all have lives. I have a wife and children and other responsibilities and shops and management. But when I was a crew chief and got into the playoffs, it was, listen, I need, you know, 2 months. I need 9 or 10 weeks right here where I'm just not going to be the best buddy. Pats aren't going to be the home run husband you're looking for. I got to focus on this ahead of me because I have an opportunity to do something special. You are not gifted that opportunity every year. And I think Denny Hamlin, as he gets later in his career, can take that, put a line in the sand and say, all right, I got it for 10 weeks. I got to be all in.
Steve Letart is with us here on Chasing Checkers. So if you're there at Hendrick Motorsports with Kyle Larson, you're the crew chief, you guys are planning for a track that, let's be honest, it's, you can have a plan and it's probably going to be thrown out the window on the first lap because Talladega is so unpredictable. You know what you've accomplished this season, but you also know how this format works in the playoffs. What is your game plan, so to speak, going into Talladega if you're Kyle Larson?
My game plan is to have a plan. You know, people talk about how it's unpredictable, and that's fair, and you can get caught up in other people's mess. That's fair. But I think too many people throw their arms up and just go, well, oh, well, hope it's okay. Hope it's my way. Well, hope is the worst plan out there. Have a plan. Good cars run up front. Good pit strategies run up front. Fast cars get to the front. Good decisions by the drivers get to the front. Now, you may do all the right things and get caught up in somebody else's mess. That is racing at Talladega. But don't allow that to front load you with excuses of why you didn't try all the first things I talked about. I would be loaded for kill. I'd have the fastest car I can bring. I would be pumping up my driver, meeting with my spot. I would be doing everything I can to eliminate the chaos. Now, that doesn't guarantee anything. That's why the fans tune in. That's why it's a wild card race. That's what makes Talladega, Talladega. But I think too many people throw their hands up in disbelief and just take what it delivers instead of trying to go take what's rightfully theirs.
You worked with Jeff Gordon, obviously, who was good on these plate tracks. But then when you and Dale Jr. got paired up, was there anything that you learned from him, like the first time you went to Daytona or Talladega, knowing how good he was at those places that, you know, that maybe changed how you viewed things as a crew chief?
Well, the big thing that Dale taught me is that he is a big believer. You can't ride around the back. You can't be conservative. If you get in a wreck, you get in a wreck. But if I ride in their back all day long on a green, white checker, I line up in the first two rows, how do you expect me to make the right move? You know, he taught me a long time ago that these are all and everyone is different. It can be the same rules. Doesn't matter. Forget the rules. It can be attitude. It can be weather. It can be positioning. It can be anything that changes the feel or flow of a race. So he needs to be in the flow of the race all day to know what he's getting himself into. Gordon wasn't that vocal about that. He'd be fine to kind of do his thing. Dale was very vocal about it. And after I watched races through his eyes, I saw why it mattered. I was, you know, probably my biggest disappointment, crew chief and Dale Jr., is the fact that we never won a Talladega race. We did win a Daytona 500. It was amazing. But I would love to win at Talladega, a place that he's found so much success. It's just hard to do.
Yeah, Steve Letarte here with us, NASCAR on NBC. They will have all the coverage of Talladega this weekend. But getting your perspective as a crew chief, this new car that while going through the playoffs and all these drivers are focused on that, they're also trying to get this next gen car ready for 2022. The teams finally are getting their hands on it in the shop, but this is really going to be a different animal, so to speak. So what are kind of your thoughts on this new car as it gets ready to roll out?
Well, it's going to be completely different. I mean, from the underwing to the aero package to the 18-inch tire to the single lug nut to sequential shifting to a five-speed. I mean, I could go on independent rear suspension. I mean, I could take up this entire interview talking just about that new car. I think the key to teams is you have to be prepared, but you can only be prepared to the level in which you have the parts and pieces. NASCAR is starting to deliver parts. There's some testing on the horizon, but you can't waste energy. And I think it's going to be very easy for these teams to make some hard and fast rules and some hard and fast decisions to have NASCAR or components change, to have to reload and go a different way. I think this is a time where, as crazy as this sounds, you almost have to be patient. You can't be the prepared Hendrick Motorsports or the prepared Team Penske that you want to be. You have to sit back, let all the rules come in, let all the cars come in, and then attack it. You can almost get too far new car and waste a lot of energy.
So knowing all the fun things, because I mean it is going to be fun trying to figure this thing out and building and everything, does it make you get that crew chief itch at all? I know you came back on the pit box for a one-off this year. Does it make you want to exit the booth and go back to pit road?
Well, I am excited about this car. I think it brings more questions in the sport than we've ever had, and I love that part about my old job. And I miss Sundays, the chess match of pit strategy. But I'm going to tell you, I love calling races from up above. I love being a race fan. I love watching the race where I can watch every car, not just the one I'm responsible for. And I love working for NBC. They challenge us to do different things. They've let me host some pre-race shows, which I don't know who thought that was a good idea, but I'm having a good time. And you know, I joke, but we're having a good time and having fun. But they allow us to do different things. They allow us to challenge ourselves, and they allow us to be race fans. And the simple fact is, when people watch our coverage, I want them to tune on and go, man, you know, old Burton and Letarte and Dale Jr., man, I bet they are awesome to go have a beer with. I mean, that's what I want. I want somebody down here in Nashville, right, where we're at, I want somebody to say, man, I'd love to run into those three on Broadway. I bet we'd have a great time. Because we would. We would have a great time. We would talk some racing. We would drink some beer. We wanted the sports in today's world. We all need sports. We all need something to be passionate about. Then in the end, doesn't really matter who wins, right? Like, it matters for the fans, but it's entertainment. We all need that, and I love the fact that I get to deliver that to the race fan.
Well, I can tell you this. I was the track announcer at the Super Speedway earlier this year, and that was the first race for NBC. The booth was right next to my booth. I can tell you guys have a lot of fun. So it certainly, certainly shows.
We get to talk about racing on TV that I'm going to watch anyway. I mean, you talk about a good job. Let, you know, be like, hey, you love racing? Yeah. Well, you want to watch it? Well, I'm going to watch it anyway. Well, all you got to do is talk into a mic. Sure. I'm your guy. Let's do it.
Exactly. Well, Steve, appreciate the time as always. Today's going to be fun at Talladega, and it's going to be fun as the playoffs roll on. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Steve Letarte, former crew chief, now with NASCAR and NBC. Always a pleasure to talk to him. He really knows his stuff. And, you know, as I said, those guys have a lot of fun up there in the booth. So I know that he's a fan, and I appreciate that. Like, when you have somebody that's talking about a sport that you watch, I appreciate that they're fans first, because that's what I am. Like, when I come on here, I mean, I'm doing this show because I'm a fan. And so I can totally relate to that with Steve Letarte. Let's give you some Sunday money real quick. The favorite for the Yellowwood 500 at Talladega is Denny Hamlin at plus 800. Denny Hamlin, of course, has been on a tear as of late. We talked about him with Steve. He's won at Daytona a lot. So it would be interesting to see there. Joey Logano is plus 900. Chase Elliott plus 1,000, a former Talladega winner, as is Ryan Blaney, Brad Keselowski. They're all former Talladega winners. Keselowski won earlier this year at the big track down in Alabama. William Byron, our guest from earlier, is plus 1,200. Larson plus 1,400. Some wild cards in this. Bubba Wallace plus 2,500 has been very good at the plate tracks. I like DiBenedetto and Stenhouse also at plus 2,500. Michael McDowell, the Daytona 500 winner, at plus 4,000. You can throw in there. I would throw in Chris Buescher at plus 4,000 as well. Daniel Suarez, plus 5,000. Like I said to start the show, you can just kind of throw everybody's name in a hat, and you never know how it's really going to turn out at Talladega. But it's a playoff race. It's going to be fun. It is the second race in this round. Before we get to the round of eight, who is going to win? We will talk all about it next week on Chasing Checkers. If you miss anything, you go to thegamenashville.com, chasingcheckersradio.com, or subscribe to the podcast wherever you get those. Apple iTunes, Spotify, Google, wherever. Just search for Chasing Checkers. We'll do it again next Saturday morning at 9 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.